Court. My name is Nathan Williams. I represent the appellant, Derek Smith. My esteemed co-counsel and boss, John Powell, will be presenting our rebuttal argument. We are appealing the order of the District Court of the Southern District of Indiana that granted the defendant's motion for summary judgment. There are two issues on appeal. The first issue is whether the defendant officers in this case arrested Derek Smith unlawfully and whether a reasonable officer would have known at the time that the arrest was unlawful. Second issue is whether the force used by the officers in the course of this arrest was excessive and whether a reasonable officer would have known at that time that the force used was excessive. In this case, the arrest was unlawful because the officers lacked probable cause to arrest Derek Smith.
You know, we have officers in this case who were faced with a person who had driven off the road onto a sidewalk, was now non-responsive and non-compliant. Wouldn't that behavior indicate that he was driving while impaired in some manner? And how can we say that it was unreasonable for these officers to believe that the impairment stemmed from some sort of drug or alcohol use?
Thank you, Your Honor. I think that it's important to look at the fact that at the time this incident was called into the officers by a shuttle bus driver, nothing was mentioned at that time about there being a drunk driver. It was simply noted that there was a car that had gone up over the road. They arrive at the scene. They do a preliminary investigatory detention in which
that didn't take much. You looked in the window and there was somebody in there.
There was somebody in there.
And they were inert, and they didn't respond.
And they did not respond. They weren't. There was no.
What more do you think they need to consider that somebody inside is impaired?
I don't think that the question is whether or not he was impaired. He was clearly impaired. But the fact is he was impaired by a medical condition.
Yeah, but how can you determine it looking through the window that this is a medical condition and not drugs or alcohol?
You can't just looking through there.
Right.
But the officers continued with their investigation.
Yeah.
They open the door. They attempt to speak to him. He does not respond. They turn off the car at this time.
Yeah.
There is no, in fact, the officers stated in their deposition testimony, they did not smell alcohol on him. They did not note any blood.
That's why they call it DUI instead of DWI. It's no longer intoxicated. It's under the influence.
Certainly. At that point, even if you assume that they were reasonable in believing that there was intoxication, even though there was no evidence, no one had suggested to them that he was a drunk driver. The witness at the scene said, "I don't know if he's on drugs." They don't just in talking to him. They don't smell anything. They don't note the presence of any other indicators of intoxication. Even if you assume that does give them probable cause, during the course of the arrest, it is undisputed that they learn that this is a medical condition. Both one of the officers and also a witness to the scene identified Derek Smith as being a diabetic who is suffering from an episode of diabetic shock at that point. Now, there's a dispute at what point this occurs. Does it occur before the handcuffs are placed on him, or does it occur after the handcuffs are placed on him? We have designated evidence that is in the record that prior to the time that the handcuffs were placed on Derek, he's on the ground, he's been tackled, prior to the time the handcuffs were placed on, both Officer Hodson and Derek's roommate at the scene indicate that this is a diabetic condition, this is a medical condition. At that point, the officers do not have probable cause to believe that he was intoxicated. At that point, and I believe that this case is similar to the Marshall v. Teske case, which was decided by this court within the last couple of months. In that case, masked and unmarked police officers approached a young man during the course of a drug raid. The young man, afraid, does what any reasonable person would do, and he flees. He takes off.
Oh, that the facts in that case are entirely different than this one.
I think that there are some similarities in that this court indicated that when the young man ran, the officers probably
officers were in plain clothes. They
yes.
didn't. They were no way of designating. They were in a neighborhood where people attacked one another. and somebody came running at him with a gun, and he ran. And,
sure.
And the court found that that was appropriate behavior because any right man, anybody in his right mind would run from somebody wearing dark clothing, not marked as a police officer, coming at him with a gun.
Certainly. The court also noted that when the young man ran to
the uniformed officers,
at that point, there's no reasonable officer
there
that could have believed that a crime had been committed.
There you
In
go.
This case, when the officers learn that this is a diabetic condition, this man is suffering from a medical situation, no reasonable officer could have reasonably believed that this was intoxication. At that point, they knew that this was a medical
situation. Is your
position
that a diabetic cannot be intoxicated, or...?
My position, no, a diabetic can certainly be intoxicated, but in this case, there's no other, I mean...
They immediately, as soon as they learned this, apparently they took him to the place where he got cleaned. I have a modest question. Does your client frequently drive a car when he needs diabetic insulin?
No. At this time, our client was, I believe that they were... not necessarily tinkering with his medication, but there was some change in the medication that he was still adjusting to at that time.
And so that
he had never had an incident where he was driving a car.
Well, he had prior incidences where he wasn't driving a car, because we had one in the record.
Yes, he had had prior incidents of diabetic shock.
So he knew that there was a possibility he might go into diabetic shock while he was driving the car.
I suppose that any diabetic knows that there's a possibility that you might go into diabetic
shock.
Well,
in particular, when this had happened fairly recently before, and he was... tinkering with the medicine, as you say.
There was the possibility. That does not change the fact.
It doesn't change the fact.
The fact that the officers arrived on the scene and assumed, and they stated in the record, that when they got there, they assumed they were dealing with a drunk driver.
On a school campus, can we really say that a person who's driving erratically and is non-responsive is likely to be suffering from a medical condition rather than drug use? Which would you say occurs more often in a student population?
I don't know that it would be appropriate for me to speculate as to what occurs more frequently in a student population. And I don't believe, while I respect that question, I don't believe that changes the fact that when the officers in this case learned that it is a medical condition, and it is not, this had been seen by one of the officers before and had been indicated by Derek's roommates that this was the reason he's doing this is a medical condition. And they knew at that point, without any other factors to suggest that he'd used drugs or had consumed alcohol. What should they have done at that point? At that point, they should have either stopped the arrest, got him up and not put the handcuffs on, and gotten some medical attention, or if it was in case the fact that they had actually applied the handcuffs, they should have removed the handcuffs at that point, got him up, got him some medical attention. Instead,
that really is your strongest point, is it not?
I believe so.
With all due respect, the probable cause argument may not carry the day here.
I understand that, Your Honor.
But it seems to me there is some issue of when, if there's an appropriate arrest and custody, a recognition is made that we're morphing from an arrest to someone who's not well.
According to the facts designated by us, when you take them in the light most favorable to the non-movement, which is Derek Smith, at some point the officers learn that he is suffering from a diabetic condition and that that is the cause for this, and at that point the cuffs go on. The arrest continues and the cuffs are placed on.
Of course, that's your alternative argument, that he wasn't arrested but he was handcuffed as part of a Terry stop. That would be the alternative argument.
I don't believe that this was a Terry stop, and that argument was made, and the court did analyze this as a Terry stop.
Right.
But I think that the use of handcuffs, and there are cases out there that say that the use of handcuffs does not necessarily escalate something from a Terry stop to an arrest, but those are cases in which the suspect is violent, and there's a justifiable concern for officer safety. In this case, Derek was non-responsive. A witness said he looked like he was going to fall over. He was not struggling. He was not violent. And the placement of handcuffs is clear custody. At that point, he knows he can't just get up and walk away.
Well,
so the arrest has taken place.
Yeah, but arguably his behavior was irrational or at least non-compliant.
It was non-compliant, but at the same time, there's also, I mean, there's evidence in the record that was not a struggle. He was not violent. The officers themselves said he wasn't trying to harm us. He simply just was being passively resistant. He was not trying to harm us, and they didn't fear for their safety at all. So there's nothing that in the context of a Terry stop justifies the escalation of force.
How long was he in best case scenario for your side in handcuffs prior to the arrival of medical attention?
I would believe the timing would be perhaps 10 minutes.
So that's the damages here, right?
The damages are also the excessive force. I mean, the excessive use of force. And in this case, as this court is aware, in analyzing whether or not there's been excessive force used, you need to look at the severity of the suspected crime, the safety of the officers and other individuals, and the attempts to flee or resist. In this case, you had a non-responsive person sitting in a car that's been turned off. He's catatonic. And in response, the officers extract him from his car, attempt to take him to the ground, tackle him, put a knee in his back, drag his face across the ground, and then place on the handcuffs. My time is up. I thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Williams. Mr. Holloway?
Please, the court, I'll proceed. My name is Mark Holloway. I represent the campus police officers, John Foster, John Rogers, Officer Hodson, and Rhonda Clark. I think it's probably necessary now to clear up some evidentiary points that counsel has made, the first one of which is whether or not it was called in as a drunken driver. The person who called it in was a campus bus shuttle driver. We do know that she said there was a person that went off the road, a car that went off the road, and nearly hit three pedestrians. We don't know whether she said drunk driver or not, but we do know from Craig Hodson's testimony that it was dispatched as a 1055, which is a possible drunk driver. Also, John Foster, when he went out to the scene, he presumed it was a possible drunk driver as well. So when the officers got to the scene, they understood it to be a possible drunk driver. Even if it wasn't dispatched that way, when they got out there, there's plenty of reason to believe that they were dealing with somebody who was impaired by either alcohol or drug impairment. The other evidentiary point that I'd like to clarify as well is the point in time that these officers understood that they were dealing with a diabetic. And it wasn't until after, and it's really undisputed, it may be disputed by argument, but it's undisputed by the evidence, is that these officers did not know they were dealing with somebody who was undergoing a diabetic shock until after he was handcuffed, until after they had gotten him up and on his knees. And one of the officers, the third officer, who came on the scene and saw his fellow police officer having a difficult time, he saw his fellow police officer using a straight armbar takedown technique, which meant he was trying to get the person handcuffed. And so Officer Hodson rushed to the scene. That's when they all bowled over, and then they handcuffed him, and they brought him up. And Officer Hodson said that he's diabetic. He's a diabetic student, because Officer Hodson, 4 days before at the Student Services Center, recognized him. Now the evidence that I suppose the source of Derek Smith's argument that they knew they were dealing with a diabetic condition and still did all this is Dale Engelhart, who signed an affidavit. We've never been able to find him to depose him, but he signed an affidavit saying, "Well, I came up on the scene and they were handcuffing him. They had him down, and with their knees on him, and I was telling him that he was diabetic." Well, it's still, even if you accept that evidence, even if you accept that testimony, it still doesn't establish that these officers knew when they were attempting to handcuff him that he was suffering from a diabetic shock attack.
Well, Mr. Holloway, let's accept that for purposes of the discussion. At some point, they come to the conclusion that they are dealing with a diabetic. Is that correct?
Yes.
Now, in the cuffs obviously are on, whatever they went on at the point of
they were on. Yeah.
So my focus and inquiry is about what's appropriate at that point. And perhaps you would give me your best argument on why Cuff shouldn't be removed at that point.
Well, he's still considered a danger to officer safety. And the point in time when this occurred was after they brought him up, he's on his knees, he's still incoherent, he's still kind of in a daze, he's still acting strange, and all they did then was they had him up on his knees, and they kept him that way. He leaned against the one officer. They held him there until the EMTs got there.
You know, increasingly we're seeing arguments in this court to follow up on Judge Flom's question that handcuffing is part of an investigatory stop and doesn't constitute an arrest. I mean, are there any limits on the circumstances in which this argument applies? And here we have a person who has not made a single offensive move. Is that correct?
It's not correct.
That's not. Okay. What was the offensive move?
Well, when John Rogers and John Foster, the two officers, got there first, John Rogers went out around to the driver's side door, John Foster to the passenger side. John Rogers is trying to get Derek Smith out. He's trying to get him to respond. He won't. He's an intern, so John Foster comes around and takes over. He testified that there was a defensive resistance. Derek Smith had his hands in close like this. He wasn't responding to the police officer. No, he wasn't striking at the police officer. He wasn't aggressively attacking the police officer, and that's why he described it as a defensive resistance. So he was resisting, and that is unrefuted, because the other person who was on the scene, this Corey Wilkinson, who also works for the parking department, was behind the car. He admitted that he did not see what was going on inside the car. He did not see when John Foster was there was a pushing and pull situation, and when he was trying to get Derek Smith out of the car. So there was some uncooperativeness, whether you call it the aggressive resistance or passive resistance. He still wasn't responding, and they knew then they were dealing with somebody who could be dangerous, and the handcuffs then are put on.
Did the handcuffs come off when the EMT folks arrived?
Handcuffs came off when the EMTs came. The EMTs took over him. He was released to the EMTs.
Well, so I guess my concern is what period of time, for example, he was in the handcuffs. Let's assume we have an appropriate arrest, not a Terry stop, and all the conduct right up until the time they reach the conclusion that they have a medical person, a medical situation, not a criminal situation, is at hand. Certainly, you wouldn't suggest, would you, Mr. Holloway, if the EMTs were an hour in coming, that he could stay in the cuffs for an hour, could he?
No,
assuming no violent resistance.
There's no evidence and there's no argument that because of the duration of him remaining in handcuffs that was excessive force. And if you look at Smith's brief, he doesn't even argue that as one of the points of excessive force. He says the straight armbar takedown technique was one, the handcuffing itself, and
no, I understand that the excessive force has come to an end. It's this question of keeping in custody, frankly, or accurately, I would suggest, an individual who's ill rather than committing a criminal offense.
Well, it also relates to Justice Robner's question about when it becomes an arrest and how long they can detain on an investigatory.
Let's say we have an arrest, for argument. I mean, let's say there's probable cause. Everything is an arrest. They come to a point at which they decide that we've got a medical situation, and there's no longer a threat to the officers. There's just, unless it's a possible threat to the individual himself, but I don't know that we should cuff people for that. But in any event, they call for the EMT people, right?
Yes.
So you call for the EMT people in part because you have a medical situation.
Yes, and it may go to the quality of what these police officers understand. Craig Hodgson happened to be on the scene 4 days before, mm-hmm. so he knew that this person was a student, a diabetic student. but it may not be so clear, and we're looking at this in hindsight, and we're also looking at it as if it's slow motion. It all happened fairly quick, and so basically the officers then are supposed to have some kind of medical training and say, oh, well, this person isn't dangerous. We can rule out any kind of drug impairment. We can rule out any kind of alcohol impairment because it must be a medical condition, and they're supposed to make that decision on the spot.
Did they release, does the record reflect whether they released Mr. Smith from the cuffs because the EMT people said we don't need him to be cuffed to go to the hospital?
I believe that's the case. And he was, of course, Derek Smith doesn't remember any of this. It's nice to go back and say, well, this person is suffering from a diabetic condition, but the state of Phillips versus Milwaukee said that these officers don't have to be medically trained, and when you look at what happened in the Student Services Center, they didn't know right off he was suffering from diabetes, and they started to handcuff him because of his strange behavior. They thought he was a danger, and the people at the Student Services Center thought he was a danger too. And then when they handcuffed him and started to handcuff him, they saw his medical bracelet, and they did the same thing. They would have handcuffed him, brought the EMTs in, and you're still dealing with somebody that might be a danger, and asked these officers to rule out that this person is dangerous because there might be a medical condition that explains it. Becomes dangerous. I mean, it becomes dangerous to put the officers in that spot. The district court correctly determined that it was a Terry stop in the first place and found that there was no Fourth Amendment violation at all. If there was probable cause, or if you require probable cause, then there was probable cause in the case of Chan versus Couch is on point regarding what are indicators of alcohol. It's just no question they had a reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. They had probable cause to arrest. Just a word about qualified immunity. I don't think it's an after Sasha versus Katz. It's really not necessary to reach the issue of qualified immunity because in applying the objective reasonableness test from Sasha, there's no Fourth Amendment violation. But the officers are entitled to qualified immunity if the court thinks otherwise. That requires plaintiffs to come forward with closely analogous cases. And we don't have closely analogous cases that were presented to us. We have Jacobs and we have Lester versus City of Chicago. Completely different cases. Jacobs was a case in which officers went into an apartment unit. They had a warrant for a different one, broke into Mr. Jacobs' apartment. They didn't have a valid warrant for that. They didn't have grounds for a warrantless search, but yet they questioned him trying to find a guy named Troy, I believe it was, and they put a gun up to his head. And so I don't see how that case is analogous to this case at all. And Lester versus City of Chicago, which is a case that was went back for trial because that was the case that overruled Gump versus Morissette. And so that case is not analogous at all either. And so even if there was a violation of the Fourth Amendment, and I don't believe the district court was incorrect in finding there was no violation of the Fourth Amendment, you got to look at closely analogous cases to see if qualified immunity applies. Plaintiffs haven't done that on any Fourth Amendment claim at all. The only cases that are analogous, for instance, City versus City of Chicago, which involves conduct more egregious than what we face here, Tom versus Voida, McNair 2, which was after Saucer, all of those cases applied, all those cases found that there was objective reasonableness. So certainly here, even if you find there's a Fourth Amendment violation, these officers are entitled to qualified immunity. Unless the court has any other questions, that'll conclude my remarks. I believe the district court properly found that the the defendant officers here did not violate the Fourth Amendment rights, and the motion for summary judgment, or the summary judgment, should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holloway. Ms. Powell?
Thank you, Your Honor. I believe I have just a few minutes to respond to Mr. Holloway's arguments, and I want to address certain factual questions that the court raised. First of all, in response to your question as to when the cuffs came off, I can confirm that that was at the request of the EMTs. Interestingly enough, the prior incident that occurred 4 days previous that Mr. Holloway refers to, Officer Hodson, the officer that was involved in the tackling of Mr. Smith, when they saw the diabetic bracelet, they ceased the handcuffing process at that point in time, called for the EMTs. And I think that clearly indicates that a diabetic situation alone does not impair or compromise officer safety. With respect to whether or not...
Did he have a bracelet in this situation?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And that was confirmed by his roommate, Dale Englehart, who came upon the scene, and according to Mr. Englehart, prior to the actual placing of the cuffs, he indicated to the officers, look, there's his bracelet, he's having a diabetic episode, and he was told to get back. And that's the response of those officers. Now, with respect to the probable cause argument, I understand...
But they called the EMTs, though, right away, right?
When I want to address the EMT issue, because... What Corey Wilkinson, the parking lot attendant, when he was asked by dispatch to go check this out, and he did not open up the door, but rather just observed through the car windows, came back and reported back to dispatch, I think it's a medical situation, send an ambulance and a unit. So Mr. Wilkinson, who is untrained, unlike these officers who have first responder training, and unlike these officers who have responded to diabetic episodes previously, was able to determine that it was a medical situation. So I believe that that impacts on what these officers reasonably could have concluded from what they encountered at the scene when they came upon Derek Smith. Essentially, if the argument of Mr. Holloway is accepted, anytime an individual who is operating a motor vehicle has a medical condition that impairs their ability to operate a vehicle and there is a crash or they come to the side of the road, what we're doing, if we follow Mr. Holloway's argument, is we're giving those officers carte blanche to place that individual who is suffering from a medical condition under arrest and use whatever force they deem necessary to remove that individual from the vehicle. And I believe that's a sad state of affairs, particularly for individuals who are suffering from diabetes. If it's that much of a concern in terms of their physical capability of driving a car, I would submit that the state would regulate their licenses more closely. I'll conclude my remarks.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Powell, Mr. Williams, and Mr. Holloway. The case will be taken under advisement.